As you know, there are a lot of text entry apps out there for the iPad. Phraseology, however, is different. It's a writing application for the iPad. With tools to quickly look up words and its sister app terminology, arrange paragraphs with ease, and even inspect your work in a markdown preview, Phraseology is powerful enough for even the busiest of writers. Check it out in the iOS App Store. It's probably the best $4 you could spend today.
Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Patrick.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm just hanging out in my workshop talking to you. It's great.
Back for another fun, exciting episode of Enough.
That's right.
So you know, regular listeners know that we record these all kind of in a row, you know, usually three or four at a time. And in this particular case, you know, I think we're going to power through three here because you got other people to get to.
It's a busy job impersonating Mike.
Yeah. But I'll try to get you to him as quickly as possible. I wanted to talk a little bit about something. So the entertainment industry, and I would say, you know, even to a certain extent, almost specifically the MPAA, since they're the governing body and the chief lobbying body for the Motion Picture Association of America, headed up by former Senator Christopher Dodd of Connecticut, they've been in a spotlight recently because of all the SOPA and PIPA and other acts of insanity to stop this thing that they are afraid of called the internet.
That's very well put.
Well, they're afraid of it because they don't understand it, right?
It's true.
They don't understand it. They don't get how it works. And they especially don't understand how to make money off of it, despite the fact that the recording industry went through this very same thing and figured out that the way to make money off of it is through Apple. But Apple's only one part of the game. Apple just happened to be at the right place and the right time, and they figured out a key detail that I think would benefit the MPAA and the entertainment industry. So if there's anyone out there who works for the entertainment industry on any level, please, for God's sakes, get this to Christopher Dodd, please. I may even try to email him, but he's never going to see it.
Just take your iPhone.
I'm going to email him.
Put it next to your desk phone on speakerphone to the whole building.
That's right.
Just let it rip.
Just let it rip. Okay. Because here's part of their problem. Part of their problem is that they think that people who pirate movies are doing so for free. And that's just not true. The fact is that they're not doing it for free, that nothing in this world is free. It's just that not all things in this world cost money. Right?
Right, exactly.
But I would argue that there are lots of things far more valuable than money. Right?
Totally. Absolutely.
Time being one.
Mm-hmm.
Time is perhaps the most valuable commodity in the world. It is completely unrenewable and unreplenishable. And we will never get it back. We have a fixed amount that everyone has, pretty much the same fixed amount, give or take diseases or poverty or
bus wrecks.
War or, yes, you get it.
Exactly.
Bus wrecks. But basically, everyone starts off with pretty much the same amount. You're never sure exactly how much you have. We've talked about all this before.
Sure.
Time is the most precious commodity. Also precious, knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. Knowledge is very precious. It's difficult to acquire. Once you do, it's difficult to maintain because certain facts and certain things are constantly changing. especially in the technology world, right? Where, you know, I mean, you know, what is true now, all of this may be completely obsolete and be old info in a year from now.
Exactly.
Right? All of these things are costs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically what the pirate is deciding is this. The pirate is deciding that the cost of seeing Bridesmaids, for instance...
It's a very specific example, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you. ...is not worth $10 in money, but is certainly worth cost in time and knowledge. Now, why do I say time and knowledge? Well, there's the obvious time, the time to download said movie. There's the time of locating a good download of said movie.
Right, and knowing where the secret corners of the internet are.
Knowing where the secret corners of the internet are, and why do you need to know where those secret corners are? Because, well, in the well-lighted, non-secret corners of the internet, there are all manner of things like honeypots, i.e., torrents that the MPAA and their conspirators put up for the express purpose of catching people pirating the movie so they can send ISPs DCMA takedown notices and catch the thief.
Oh, we
that's one.
Got him with our secret file.
We got them with our secret file, right? Because we've digitally encoded it, and we've tracked the IP address, and anyone who downloads from this IP address and or downloads this movie, we've got their IP address, and now we can track them down to their ISP, and we can send their ISP a notice, and their ISP can turn around and shut off their service, at least if they get enough of those notices. So you have to know how to avoid those. You have to know how to avoid the things that are infected with viruses and malware that are put out there by, you know, Russian mafia, Chinese mafia, you know, whomever, to basically, you know, zombie your PC mm-hmm. and, you know, steal your data and all of this other stuff. They embed this right into the movie stream, and there's no way that you can even know what's happening, right?
Right.
So there's that. So you have to know how to avoid that stuff. You have to know how to avoid the bad rips. In other words, where was this movie sourced from? Is this some guy holding up his flip camera in a movie theater? Or, you know, is this straight from some screener DVD that was provided to the studios, right? Or is this straight from someone else's DVD,
mm-hmm.
which is more likely the best rip of all, right? Because a screener DVD, you know, has scrolling text along the bottom saying, you know, property of Universal Pictures, you know, all across and all that stuff, right?
Right.
And maybe an incomplete cut of the film, because oftentimes those are provided before the final cut of the film, and you might be missing, you know, you might be missing several pieces.
Right, like Jack survived the Titanic.
Right, exactly.
We just keep talking about girly movies.
We do. Although, dude, if as girly movies go, Bridesmaids.
It's pretty rough. Oh my
God, that was just so side-splitting.
It's good.
Would you like a sandwich? Would the bear like a sandwich? this is a beer sandwich right there. My point is that when you start from the premise that people are downloading your movie for free, that they're pirating it, it's more than just you're punishing, you know, those who are obtaining it legally and, you know, all of the, with all of this stuff or whatever, but it's also that you're not having a real conversation about cost, right?
Right.
And the way that Apple had that conversation with the record industry was making them see that, in fact, there was a cost, and that cost was lower than what they was to most people than what they wanted. So they needed to price these things at a cost that was perceived to be equal or lower than the cost of pirating.
Exactly. Yeah, I think a lot of people looked at iTunes when it was coming out. And I think for me, especially when they started doing the TV and movie store, you know, it's like, okay, well, surely this is going to, you know, I mean, common sense would say, well, piracy is going to go up. You know, that people are going to be exposed to all this content, maybe for the first time, that they can get on the internet, and they're going to go look for ways to get around Apple's, you know, paywall, for lack of a better word. But I think in reality, like you said, if the price point's right, then, you know, like now for me, it's so much easier just to go buy something from iTunes or even from Amazon with their crazy downloader than try to go find something in the dark corners of the internet.
Yeah.
They hit the point.
Well, and, I mean, even things that are free, right? So Downton Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing on the girly theme again. But Downton Abbey's great. You should watch it. Downton Abbey is available for free streaming on PBS's site. But their stream is effed up and broken right now. And I've sent a note to them letting them know that we actually have a friend who works for the local PBS affiliate, and they said, yep, we've been getting complaints about that here. That's a problem at National. Here's the email address to send, you know, your complaint to. But there you go. So what did I do? Well, I went to Amazon. And I just streamed it from Amazon for $2.
Right.
Could have gotten it for free, but at $2, I could stream it and get a better quality version than the one that was available for streaming for free, right?
Right. And so the quality and the money, you know, those were, the value was different than the time it would have taken to do it.
Yeah, totally.
That interplay is very, it's complex, but... I think really kind of fundamental to understanding why the MPAA system is so broken.
Yeah. Well, and here's another example, non-girly thing, Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock, the show, the new Sherlock Holmes that's been airing on the BBC in the UK, right?
Sure.
Blocked for anyone outside of the UK. Not going to be available here on PBS until, I think, May. I want to watch it now. I can't legally buy it. They won't let you. It's only for the UK. In the UK, you can stream it for free off their site in HD for free.
Mm-hmm.
But because I don't live in the UK, I can't watch it. So what am I going to do? Well, let me put it this way. I would pay $10 an episode. No, scratch it. I'd pay $20 an episode to watch that right now. It's that good. It is that good. It contains that much value for me, that much entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I would pay that. So if I'm willing to pay $20 and I can't, I'm going to find all sorts of illegal means to get it.
Right. At that point, the time is...
At that point,
is what's in question,
right? Exactly, because I know what my time is worth,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I'm a consultant, I charge by the hour, so I know exactly the dollar.
You literally have a number attached to it.
I literally have a number attached to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I know that if I can find a proxy server to get around the UK streaming stuff, or, you know, if I wanted to find a torrent of it somewhere, or contact one of my friends in the UK who was willing to throw it up on their, you know, sharing service, mm-hmm. and send me a link to it, or Dropbox, or wherever, I can get that in about 15 minutes.
Right.
And now I've actually saved money, because it is cheaper than what I would have paid for it if it was available for me to pay for.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right?
And now the BBC has a problem, right? That problem is that if they did want to make it available for people outside of the UK to purchase, now they have to beat that price.
Yeah. No, for sure.
And that's what the MPAA and their cronies are facing, is that they have a price to beat that they're not recognizing.
Mm-hmm.
That they're pretending doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean it's they're operating from an old model because, you know, before those corners of the internet existed, the time question maybe wasn't even a question. Definitely a smaller one.
No, certainly. I mean, where else could you have gotten it before the internet existed? Right. If you were in a major city like or New York or L.A., you could get it on a street corner in Chinatown, you know, on some DVD or videotape back in those days, and it cost you $5. And it would, and you would have no idea of what the quality was. It was usually something that was homemade, and you got it back home, and it might be crap. In which case, what are you going to do? Go complain to the person who sold it to you? Well, they just picked up their blanket and left about 5 minutes after you did. Right? You're never going to see them again.
That customer service is not excellent.
It's not well known for their customer service, right? But, I mean, that's about the only way that you could get this stuff was to have it available to you in the first place. Mm-hmm. The fact is that most people didn't, and the MPAA then didn't have a problem, right? Because, you know, people bought things because there was nowhere else to go. And they could get away with selling videotapes to video stores for $90 or more. Not joking about that. Having been a former video store employee, I can tell you that that's what the video stores actually paid for most of their releases. Most of their major releases were between $70 and $90.
Wow, they're not around anymore.
Right. Well, exactly, they're not around anymore. But the reason that the MPAA or the entertainment industry could get away with charging that,
mm-hmm.
and that the video stores would pay that, is because $90 was 30 rentals, right?
Right.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
they would do that math and say, "Oh,
no,
yeah,
well, we can
this new release of Pretty Woman, since we're on the girly theme still, yeah, we have no problem. That was a big hit film. People are going to want to see it again two, three times, and it will rent like hotcakes, and we'll make our money back tenfold, and that's our business model."
Right, and I think. You know, companies that, I mean, guys like, you know, Blockbuster, you know, maybe they straddled that transition where the time invested at that point was, okay, I'm going to drive down to the corner and pick out what we want to watch, and the money is I'm going to, you know, pay the $9 or however much it is to rent it, and then I got to take the time to send it, you know, to take it back. And so it's almost like they didn't survive that transition. Once it came to a point where, okay, I can stream everything immediately, mm-hmm. or I can have zero time involved and let it wait for it to show up to me,
mm-hmm.
then they didn't make it.
Yeah, or, I mean, I think people discount the effect of things like Redbox, too, where it's like, oh, I'm at the grocery store, I can just use, you know, get a movie from Redbox right here.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's right here, and I'll just bring it back next week or, you know, 2 days from now when I go to the store to go pick up some medicine.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, so I think they got hit from several sides, and that's, you know, one of many reasons why they didn't survive. But once again, I think a good main reason why they didn't survive is just simply because they... You know, once again, could they have survived if they recognized the cost, right? And recognized that the cost was more than money, and that in that case it was even more than time, it was convenience.
Right.
Right? I mean, how many restaurants, you know, pizza joints, let's just say, or Chinese places, have free delivery? Why can't a video store have free delivery? Right? How would that still with Netflix? I have to wait at least 24 hours for my disc to show up.
Right. Hey, we're fortunate. We have a distribution point here in Memphis. It's great. We get stuff the next day. But yeah, you're right. I mean, but there is that maybe that's where Redbox is trying to fit into this, is to
well, exactly.
You know. But you're right. I think the point is MPAA is so irrelevant. That's not quite the right word, but so They just don't understand what the situation is today.
Yeah, they not only don't understand the technology, don't understand the situation, but the most important thing, that and the whole point of this, that they don't understand is the cost, right? Because they can only see money as a cost. To them, that's all they see. That's all they know. And that's all they're fighting for, right?
Yeah.
And what they don't see is that the cost is so much greater than money, as most things usually are, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've had this discussion before. Money is worthless. Money has zero value.
Yeah.
Money is paper. And the only thing that gives it value is trust. And the moment that I stop trusting it, it becomes worthless. Why? Because it is a construct. Money is a construct for the trading of trust. It is, it, you know, it, you could say exchange of goods and services. No, not really. Why? Well, because we have to agree that X service has X value.
Exactly.
That X good has X value. That is a transaction that is based on agreement and trust. You trust that by, I trust you to sell me X service or X good for X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And you only make that transaction, you only make that offer if you can be assured that you can take X amount of dollars and turn around and trade it for something of equal value.
Like a barbecue sandwich?
Like a barbecue
sandwich.
Speaking
my language.
But, you know, I mean, but you get my point, right?
Absolutely.
That as long as we talk about money, as long as we focus on money, that money is a construct that's not only for the trading of agreement and trust, but even more than that, its purpose is, in fact, to obscure that, right? To make that opaque.
Exactly.
Right? To make what's really going on opaque. And that's the problem with the conversation that they're trying to have, the conversation they're trying to have about the internet, the conversation they're trying to have about the future of their business. They think they're talking about money, and they don't realize that money is worthless.
It's very true. No, it's very true. It's a great way to frame it, I think, because it makes the conversation not about Iron Man 3 or, you know, whatever piece of work, whatever, even the medium itself. It's not about entertainment. It's about, this is a problem that's much, much bigger and more fundamental than, you know, they're trying to make it, or that they can make it, because they just don't.
Then they can make it, right? You know, if they were to come to the table, you know, and say, okay, we understand that for some people, what we're providing is not of high enough value for them to exchange, to make that trust and agreement exchange with us.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have to do to our product to make that hurt less, right? And to make that agreement and trust exchange even more valuable? Do we have to produce a more valuable product? Do we have to reduce the price? Is our product priced in a way that they'll never be able to meet that, right? And we also have to account for those folks that no matter what the amount, that we could charge a buck for this, that there are going to be some people out there that even a buck is worth, that they would rather spend 2 hours finding it for free than they would to spend a buck.
Right.
Right? And that is that we're not going to reach those people. The people we need to reach is the honest people who are acquiring this through other means, because we're not meeting that value and trust ratio. And that's, I think, you know, the takeaway. Because this isn't just about Hollywood. This isn't just about movies. This is about everything, right? Everything. You know, that we make these decisions on a daily basis of trading our time and our attention and our ability and our knowledge for these other things, whether that be the Facebook or Twitter or music or television or movies or whatever, that we are, that we're making a trade to saying what I'm getting from here from an entertainment perspective or from a value knowledge perspective or from a value perspective is worth this cost. And that is an important conversation to have. It's an important conversation to think about. And even more importantly, people should recognize that even if money is not exchanged, that there's always a cost, that there is nothing that is free, that there's always some cost. There's some value. There's some way to measure that transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's good. It's heavy. It's kind of heavy, but good.
That's what we do here, Stephen.
It's true. It is very true.
We bring the heavy.
We bring the heavy. That could be the new tagline. I've renamed a show, I think, this week already, just doing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe
we'll title this "We Bring the Heavy."
I like it.
I like that. We bring the heavy.
Cool, man.
All right, that's Tyler's show. It has nothing to do. People are going to look at that title and go, what the F? They're going to hear the show, and they're going to go, huh? And they're going to get to the end, and they're going to go, oh, okay, now I get where the title comes from.
That's right. It's incentive.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
All right.
Have a good one.
Yeah, you too, my friend. This has been a lot of fun. It's been so great having you. And really, you should tell my listeners who the heck you are and where the heck they can find you, because you have yet to do that on a single episode.
I'm just trying to... No.
Trying to just be the host. That's all Mike asked. He didn't say, oh, yeah, come on, pimp your shit.
Yeah,
your
tell them about your website. That's the only voice I can do right now because I'm kind of sick and I'm Southerner. So it's like a
really
Microsoft John Syracuse robot duck voice.
Yeah, I like that.
Right, so I'm Stephen Hackett. You can find me on the internet at 512pixels.net, where I write about Apple and design and journalism and... whatever else tickles my fancy that day. And you can find me on Twitter at ISMH.
Yeah, I tell you, you write and produce far more often than I do. So people should really be following your stuff, because I really just, I'm trying to figure out a way to make money by doing nothing. That's pretty much my goal in life. So, all right, well.
Cool, man.
Well, I guess we'll talk later, my friend.
Sounds good.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.